The story is told of Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. It's a well-known story. Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev did not marry into a Hasidic family. At some point, he left his wife, his children, for several months to go learn from the Maggid of Mezrich. He viewed it as what an opportunity he could sit at the feet of the Maggid of Mezrich and soak up his Torah. What an opportunity, with his wife's support, he went to learn there for a few months. His father-in-law was not happy with this decision. And so when Rav Levi Yitzchak came back, his father-in-law was a little bit antagonized and wanted to attack his son-in-law in terms of what he did. And so he said to him, "Nu, you just spent the last few months away in yeshiva, what did you learn?" And Rav Levi Yitzchak said, "I learned that there's a God." And that, like, agitated the father-in-law to no end. You left for imagine you paid $25,000 in tuition to learn there's a God. We learn that when we're little children. So he turned to the housekeeper, this non-Jewish housekeeper, and he said, "How many gods are there?" "And one. There's one God." So he said, "You see, even the housekeeper knows there's a God. What, you had to leave my daughter, my grandchildren, for a few months to learn that there's a God? We all know that." And Levi Yitzchak looked at his father-in-law and said, "No, she says there's a God. I know there's a God." And what he was trying to illustrate, and why I think this story is meaningful, is because there are a lot of things that, like, kind of we know in our head, sort of. It's like we can parrot certain things, we could say certain things, but to believe it, to really in our heart feel something is true, is a totally different story. And what I think Leil HaSeder is, Pesach in general, but the Seder night in particular is it's a Chag HaEmunah. So we all believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We all know that we're an Ama Nivchar. We all know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. We all know, we say it twice a day, that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. But the goal at the Seder is to really develop that profound belief. We really believe everything that we say all the time in the busyness of day-to-day, when we mention Yetzias HaTzaim, is to really develop that belief in Yetzias HaTzaim. And much of what we do throughout the Seder is to try to illustrate that. So I want to try to cover several ideas and then end hopefully with a story. The first idea is, we know most mitzvahs that we do, what do we do before performing a mitzvah? We say a bracha, right? Berachos ha-mitzvah, we say a bracha over l'asiyasa. So who here knows Rav Goldwicht? Rav Goldwicht, one of the YU Rosh Yeshiva, correct? So Rav Goldwicht wrote a parish on the Haggadah, and he asked this interesting question, right? Very basic question is, why do we not say a bracha on the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias HaTzaim? We're going to fulfill the mitzvah. We all know there's a mitzvah at the Seder of Sipur Yetzias HaTzaim. Why don't we say a bracha on it? We should say a bracha. Bracha ta Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Asher Kishon Mitzvah Vetzivanu al Sipur Yetzias HaTzaim. Why is there no bracha? So listen to what he says. He says, you know why there's no bracha? Because we are supposed to be reliving. We're supposed to actually experientially feel that we are reenacting, we are reliving Sipur Yetzias HaTzaim. And if we're really reliving Sipur Yetzias HaTzaim, at this point in time, what exactly is happening? Before we start the story, who are we? What are we?
Slaves.
We're slaves. As slaves, we can't yet say the bracha of Asher Kishon Mitzvah Vetzivanu al Sipur Yetzias HaTzaim. We can't say it. When will we be able to say it? Only once we're free. So you can't say the bracha of al Sipur Yetzias HaTzaim if we really, again, believe, if we're really living this story. So I think it's also helpful in thinking in context. A lot of what we do and don't do is supposed to conjure those feelings of, at this point in time, we are supposed to feel that we are reliving this story. Okay, one idea to consider. Another idea to consider is 4 cups of wine. Why 4 cups of wine?
What's
the Dal Lashon Shel Geula, right? So it's actually, it doesn't really appear in the Gemara. It appears in the Rashbam. It appears, I believe, in other Mamari Chazal. But the Talmud Bavli doesn't really mention this. But this is the classic answer we are given. Is there a Dalid Lashonos Shel Geula? Votseisi, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Vlakachti. And corresponding to those four terms, we drink 4 cups of wine. The Gemara also, again, it's a Medrash, it's a Yerushalmi, give a different explanation, a different answer. And they say that Yosef, we know that Yosef, there are certain allusions to Yosef in the Haggadah. Why are there these allusions to Yosef in the Haggadah? What do you think? Correct. That's like the beginning of the Mitzrayim story all relates to Yosef. So there are certain allusions to Yosef in the Haggadah. Karpas could be an allusion to Yosef, the Ketonas Pasim. But here, what Chazal tell us is that Yosef interpreted the dreams of the Sar Mashkim and the dreams of the Sar Ofim. Right? Those two dreams he interpreted. And when he interpreted the dream of the Sar HaMashkim, or the dream of the Sar HaMashkim itself, had the word kos four times. Talking about kos shel paro. It said the word kos four times. And so Chazal say, corresponding to the four times it says the word kos in that dream, we have the four cups of wine. The Panovich Rav, who built the Panovich Yeshiva, wonders, how did Yosef know how to interpret the Sar Mashkim's dream and Sar Ofim's dream? How did he know? They have very divergent interpretations, right? The Sar Ofim's dream was going to end in doom and gloom, and Sar Mashkim's dream was going to end in glory and reinstatement to his position. How did Yosef know which was going to end well, which was not going to end well? So the Panovich Rav says the answer is actually very simple. If you think about the dreams, the Sar Ofim's dream, the role of the Sar Ofim was totally passive. He did nothing. What happened? He was just there. The birds were pecking, they were taking this, they were taking that, and he was a person who just sits by passively and doesn't do anything, does not have a bright and glorious future. The Sar HaMashkim, on the other hand, what was his role in his own dreams? Was active. He was doing. He was making things happen. Yosef heard the dreams and said, okay, passive, you're going to be a victim. Nothing good's going to come of this. You, Sar HaMashkim, you're active. You are taking matters into your own hand. You're taking an active role. There's going to be a bright future ahead of you. Why does that then relate to the four cups? So first of all, it happens to relate to cups of wine much better than Dal Lashono Shel Geula. But what's the message? The message is to understand that Geula is a partnership. The Dal Lashono Shel Geula is, look what Hashem does for us. The four cups of wine is we also need to partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in creating our destiny. We have to take an active role. And again, it really sets the framework of the Haggadah, is I'm going to take an active role in experiencing my own Geula. I'm going to understand that it's not that Hashem just takes me out, but that I help take myself out. Any freedom, I cannot just be a passive recipient, a partnership, a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I need to take a role. That's why we say, we zacharti lach chesed nurayach, right? We remind Hashem, remember the great kindness, lech tech acharai b'amidbar. Hashem says, remember, you followed me out of the desert. You had a role in following me out of Mitzrayim. I did all these miracles, but you also partnered with me in terms of following along the way. So that's something to consider in terms of Dal Lashono Shel Geula. One more core thought to consider is that the centerpiece of Magid in terms of the Torah text is what text? Who knows? Where did the Pesukim come from that really tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Kisavo, correct. If you look on page 16, we call it Arami Oved Avi. Okay? It is... You see in the middle and towards the top of the page, Arami Oved Avi, Vayir Mitzrayim, Vayir Gan Shamim Seim Ba'ad, V'Yisham L'Goy Gadol Atzum V'Rav. You turn the page, Vayir Eo Sonam Mitzrayim, Vayir Nunu, Vayir Nunu, Alinu Avodah Kasha. Next page, Vayir Nitzak El Hashem Elokei Avosinu, Vayir Shema Hashem Es Kolinu, Vayir Saninu, Es Amalinu, Es Achatzinu. We have several psukim, and then all of these drashas that explain the psukim. And so the very basic question that hopefully we all wonder is, if you wanted to pick psukim to tell the story of slavery in Mitzrayim and freedom from Mitzrayim, it would seem like the appropriate text to take takes Pesukim from Sefer Shmos. The story is so vivid, it's so easy to understand. You don't need any of these drushes. Just give us the Pesukim. You start with these Pesukim, they're hard to understand, and there's drush after drush after drush, because we can't make heads or tails of these of the Pesukim. So why do we pick these kinds of obscure Pesukim? And the context of these Pesukim is they came when a person brought his Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. He recited these psukim recounting Jewish history. But again, it was like an odd choice of psukim. So I'd like to share with you three ideas as to why these psukim serve as the centerpiece. Approach number one is an approach of Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik suggests the following. We have Torah Shebechsav, we have Torah Shebaal Peh. The Psukim and Sefer Shmos would really represent a Torah Shebechsav approach. But Torah Shebechsav was for generations, right? For eternity, it was written down. And if you want to understand the Psukim and Shmos, open a Chumash, read the Psukim. If you know basic Hebrew, you'll understand them. If not Hebrew English, it's very easy to understand. You don't need any other resources to understand the storyline as it's told in Sefer Shmos. These Psukim, the weakness is exactly what makes them special. The Psukim and Kisavo, I can't understand them without Chazal, meaning they're symbolic of Torah Shebaal Peh. The Leil HaSeder is the ultimate night of Mesorah, of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's about our parents conveying a Mesorah to us. Our parents communicating our history, our Jewish history to us. Our parents giving over the Seder from their parents and them from their parents. There's a sense of the Mesorah, and therefore we choose Psukim that require Torah Shebaal Peh in order to understand them, so that we understand that this is a night of Torah Shebaal Peh, this is a night of Mesorah. That's the first answer, the answer of the Rav, as to why we choose these Psukim. Rav Meir Torsky, also a Rosh Yeshiva here at Yeshiva University, so he suggested a different answer. He suggested that where do these Psukim come from? They come from a person bringing his Bikurim. He's standing at the Beis HaMikdash. Being taken out of Mitzrayim was not about freedom. It was not about being taken from slavery to freedom. But it was a calling. It was being taken from Mitzrayim to somewhere. We never want to be people who run away. Running away is not healthy. We just want to run to. I want to run to something. Where was Klal Yisrael running to? Ultimately, to the Beis HaMikdash. So these psukim symbolize a Jew at the Beis HaMikdash saying, I used to be this. I was a slave in Mitzrayim, and Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, took me out so that I could be here at the Beis HaMikdash. And that's the picture that we're supposed to be conjured up in our mind when we see these psukim, is it's not just about being taken out, it's not just about Jewish history, but it's about standing at the Beis HaMikdash. And if you look through Dayenu, Dayenu is on page 22 and 23. Look through all the phrases of Dayenu, and then it's summarized below. What's the very end of Dayenu? The last line, and again, summarized at the bottom. We thank Hashem for all the things Hashem did for us. Where does it end? It ends with Bana lanu es beis habachira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you built for us the Beis HaMikdash. That's the culmination. That's the ultimate goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's why, again, these set of psukim are chosen. I suggest a third answer, which is, again, Pesach, as we've mentioned, is a Chag HaEmunah. Emunah is not easy. Belief, real belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is hard. Why is it hard? Because we live in a world where there's so much going on. There's so much noise, there's so much confusion, there's so many things that sometimes it's hard for us, among all the noise and distraction, to be able to see the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I want to see the hand of Hashem, sometimes I have to search. Sometimes I have to look a little bit. Sometimes I have to read between the lines. Sometimes I have to understand what exactly is taking place. And had we chosen the Psukim from Sefer Shmos, I wouldn't have had to look for Hashem. It's clear. Look at the Makos. Look at what Hashem does for us. It was so clear and obvious, but that's not an emunah that can guide us day in and day out. That was an emunah where look at these incredible miracles Hashem did for us. They were so obvious for us to see. The experience of emunah that we live today is being able to search and find the hand of Hashem. So these psukim, where we have to work hard to understand them, we have to understand what exactly was going on. We have to search among all of the textual challenges to see Hashem's hand. That's really what emunah is to be able to see the hands of Hashem. And again, if you think about it, one of the psukim we make references to is Kol Aben HaYaora Tashlichu. We reference, like, imagine being Miriam at the time in which this decree existed, and your brother, this miraculous baby, is now being thrown to the river. Imagine how a person could react on an emunah level, like the bitterness, the anger she could have felt. But it's a reminder that every stage there was a Yad Hashem. We can't always perceive it in the here and now. When she saw Moshe put in the river, had she walked away at that time, she would have said, "Oh, Hashem, what's going on?" But when you are able to pull back like an onion, one layer after the other, you start to see the Yad Hashem. And perhaps that's why Arami Ovid Avi is chosen as the centerpiece. I want to end with a story, which hopefully circles back the beginning and has us think about who we are and what this night is about. The story is told of a young man about your age, about 16 years old, who spent his summer volunteering in an assisted living facility. I believe it was in Baltimore, Maryland. He was a frum boy working in a frum assisted living, at least a Jewish assisted living facility in Baltimore. And one of his roles was to try to help them make a minyan every day. And so he'd walk around, he'd ask the old men if they're willing to, you know, come join the minyan. And there was one man in particular who's known in this assisted living facility as really being a grumpy, bitter, angry man. And one day, one of his friends went to ask this man if he'd come to minyan, and this man like let that person have it. He was totally disgusting to this person. So the 16-year-old, whose name is Mordechai, decided the next day he was going to confront this old man. And he was going to say to him, "You know, you don't have to say yes about coming to minyan, but you don't have to be so obnoxious to a teenage boy." And so Mordechai goes to the 16-year-old man, and he starts, you know, he's ready, he's like practiced his speech, and he knocks on the door, the man says, "Come in." And he looks at him, he says, "My friend told me how you treated him yesterday. Why did you talk to him that way? No one's forcing you to come to minyan, but you can be respectful." And this older man, he's taken aback, and he says to 16-year-old Mordechai, "Sit down for a minute." Mordechai sits down. He says, "I want to tell you a story. When I was 12 years old, my father and I were taken to the concentration camp. My father was a devout Jew, a pious individual. He managed to smuggle in a tefillin shel rosh. And every day he would put this tefillin shel rosh on his head, in spite of the fact that he knew he was risking his life. I was 12 years old, and as my bar mitzvah started to approach, my father desperately wanted me not just to be able to put on a tefillin shel rosh for my bar mitzvah, but for my bar mitzvah, he wanted me to fulfill the mitzvah hanachas tefillin b'shleimusa in their full form. He wanted me to put on the tefillin shel yad also. And he heard that several barracks away, someone there had a full set, a tefillin shel yad also. And so the morning of my bar mitzvah, my father got up very early in the morning, in darkness. He kind of hid and managed to sneak his way to the other barrack. And I was watching from the windows. My father, the only survivor I had left in my family. And I saw my father on his way back from the barrack with something tucked under his shirt, mission accomplished. He had the tefillin hidden under his shirt, and I saw him. He was five barracks away, four barracks away, three barracks away, two barracks away. And he was going from two barracks away to the barrack before mine. This vicious and cruel Nazi was hiding behind the tree, and he came out and he looked at my father and he shot him dead on the spot. I was traumatized. I ran out to my father to see him lying there dead. And I saw that those tefillin hidden under his shirt. Mordechai, you can imagine, like imagine being this Mordechai. How do you respond to that? This man says, "Go to this drawer." Points the drawer in his room. Tells Mordechai to open the drawer. And there sitting in the drawer is a pouch. A crusted pouch. But a velvet pouch, a tefillin bag. And in that tefillin bag are those tefillin. He said, "Those are the tefillin my father died for. I'm so angry at God, I'm never going to put on tefillin. I told myself I'll never put on tefillin again. So that's why I don't go to minyan." I think a pretty jarring experience for Mordechai. The lesson for Mordechai is like, leave this guy alone for the rest of my summer internship. And so he gets day in and day out. He tries to round up a minyan. Will not go near Mordechai, near the old man's room for the rest of the summer. But unfortunately, one day, There's a man in the shul, an old man in the shul, who says, I have yahrzeit today. I need to say Kaddish. And it was a rough day in the assisted living facility. There were not enough people. One man came in, a second man, only 8 men. Even with Mordechai's, only 9 men, not enough for a minyan. And this man's so sad. He says, but I need to say Kaddish. I have yahrzeit. Mordechai, please find me a 10th man. Mordechai does another round throughout the assisted living facility. Everyone says, no, I'm too tired, I'm not feeling well. Mordechai comes back and says, I'm sorry, I couldn't find a minyan. The man's begging, pleading, I need a 10th of yahrzeit. Mordechai realized there's one door and one door only to go to. And so even though he had said he wasn't going to come back to this grumpy old man, it's the only chance. He goes to the old man, knocks on the door. The old man says, come in. Mordechai comes in. He looks at him, you again? Didn't you learn to stay away from me? And Mordechai, you know, not as brave and confident as the first time. He's stammering, trying to, someone has yahrzeit. Is it possible that maybe you consider just come down to help? Or if they do anything, just sit there so a fellow patient in the facility can have a minyan. The old man looks at Mordechai and he says, one condition. I'll come if I want you to put me the back. As soon as it's done, wheel me right out. Last one in, first one out. I don't want to be there any longer than necessary. So Mordechai says, deal. And then the old man, and then Mordechai says, I don't know what gave me the chutzpah to say this, but I said to him, do you want me to grab the tefillin from your drawer? And the old man looks at Mordechai and says, fine, but same condition. You take the tefillin, bring me down, put me in the back, and take me right out afterwards. Mordechai does what he promised, brings him down. This person's able to take Kaddish that day. Mordechai is there. He comes in ready to wheel the man out. And as he looks at the man is just bawling, crying and crying and crying, caressing his tefillin, saying, Tati, I feel so connected. I feel so close to you. Mordechai, is everything okay? And the old man says, yes, just give me another few minutes. Mordechai comes back, just another few minutes with my tefillin. And then afterwards, he takes his tefillin off. Mordechai helps him wrap them. Mordechai brings him back upstairs. And after bringing him back to his room, he says, do you want me to bring you back tomorrow? And the man says, yes, please. And this story repeats itself for several more days. A few days, however many, a week later, Mordechai comes up now to the regular routine of bringing this guy down to Minyan. Unfortunately, he walks into the room and he sees the old man's not there anymore. And he goes to the desk, he says, where is the old man? Unfortunately, the old man passed away. There's a ceremony at the end of the summer. They give an award to each of the volunteers. And after Mordechai is presented with his award, this older lady comes over to him and says, thank you for everything you did for my father. Mordechai says, what does that mean? Who's your father? She said, my father told me how you got him to start putting tefillin on. And I want you to know that on his deathbed, when he was taken from the assisted living facility, he had a heart attack or a stroke, I forget. And he was brought to hospital. And in his bed in the hospital, he asked for someone to go back to his room to get him his tefillin. And he died with his tefillin on him. You allowed my father to die with peace, harmony, tranquility, and a sense of purpose in life. And thank you. And I share this story because I think, again, if we go back to the beginning, so Purim is about binding us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's about helping us feel, not just in our mind, not just in our head, but in our heart, our body, to actually feel that relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tefillin is a reminder of Yetzias Mitzrayim because it symbolizes that real physical connection we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Mirat Hashem, like this old man, so it takes us time, but that we could appreciate that sense of connectedness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hopefully, for each and every one of us, Pesach will represent that ability to bond and to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam.